For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, folks. We hope that you're having a great Wednesday morning. We're going to jump right into this because we have Governor Jeff Landry, the governor of the great state of Louisiana, joining us this morning. A lot to talk about. Governor, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Governor. I did want to start with crime reduction, if you don't mind, this morning, and then we'll get to tax reform. The most recent UNO satisfaction survey of the citizens that were surveyed in the city of New Orleans, there was an uptick in the satisfaction. And I wanted to make the following observation. I do not believe in coincidences. I think it has a lot to do with the initiative and the effort and the dialogue that you've created as it relates to accountability and Troop NOLA and the work that those folks have done. I was a little hesitant at first as to the approach and whether or not there would be success. I was wrong. I think it has gone really well and has made a significant impact on the city. And we certainly hope that those efforts and your leadership in that endeavor continues.
Yeah, well, listen, I want to thank you. I mean, to me, no one knows it better than you. You know, all the years that you spent in law enforcement, especially like starting under Harry Lee, running the biggest sheriff's office in the state of Louisiana, especially right next to the city of New Orleans, which has consistently had a lot of violent crime problems over the decades. You know, I think, you know, it shows that, you know, both leadership, communication, and the willingness to hold people accountable work. You know, when people know that there are consequences to wrongful actions, they adjust their conduct. The one thing that I will say is that we are going to stay on this mission. I don't think anyone would disagree that if we don't stay, we end up falling back into the same problems that we had before. But we had a meeting just last week where we were talking about the ankle monitoring systems and the way that we want to help on the juvenile side over in Orleans Parish. You know, I was with Sheriff LaPinto just Monday night over at the game as well. We were talking about things that we can do collectively to continue to put pressure on the city and on the criminals in the city. And, you know, so again, it's just doing the same things that y'all have done in Jefferson Parish all you know, for many decades.
Well, we appreciate that. Let's pivot to tax reform because I know that you have limited time with us. This is quite a large initiative. You're to be commended. I think a lot of people believe, like you, that tax reformation is needed. I wanted to start, though, with I think you folks, your team is thinking about calling this special session November 7th through November 21st. Do you think that gives local government and all the players and others enough time to be able to evaluate the impact of what's being proposed?
Well, I hope it does. I mean, look, again, you know, we consistently find ourselves on the short end of the wick. And it's because of the constitutional constraints that we placed in the Constitution since 1974. And again, this was part of the reason that I tried to urge the legislature to have, a limited convention under which we can do some rewriting. And so we only have one more shot at putting a major piece of a rewrite on the ballot before the voters, and that is in March. And to do so, unfortunately, we have to have that amendment passed and sent over to the Secretary of State in early January. So we just don't have a lot of time to be able to do that. What I am hoping is by putting the package out as early as we have, look, every one of the legislators has the packets of bills, has the draft bills. In fact, we're working on cleaning those up as we speak. I'm meeting with the executive board of the Police Jury Association today, I think, by Zoom. We're consistently talking to them. I talked to a number of the sheriffs about the impacts. And so what we're hoping to do is that by the time we get to the special session, that we'll have enough input so that we'll make some real good decisions.
Yeah, the elimination of the corporate franchise tax, I think a lot of folks obviously are in favor of that, reduction of corporate rates as well as reduction in individual tax rates. Let's focus on individual tax rates for a moment. You want to put a flat 3%, if my memory serves me correct. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, let's kind of walk through that. I think it's a great way to start. First of all, if this package was to pass, every working man and woman in the state is going to have more money in their pocket. We've got three brackets, three personal income tax brackets. We're going to virtually eliminate the bottom bracket. We're going to take the next two brackets, we're going to collapse those brackets and bring and make a flat 3% rate for income tax. Now, that is the lowest of any states that have an income tax, and I think puts us on a path to virtually eliminating the income tax in the not so distant future. Like you said earlier, we're going to eliminate the corporate franchise tax. We're going to reduce corporate income tax from 7.5% to 4.5%. We're going to double the retirement income exemption for seniors. That should be very attractive to seniors as well. Something else that you would appreciate, and I think you're going to like, we're going to more closely align the state and local sales tax basis. Because, you know, it was ridiculous. Like the state would say, we can tax this, but you can't tax that, meaning to the locals. And so we're going to try to streamline those local and state sales tax bases as well. We're going to eliminate the sales tax on prescription drugs at the local. It's already eliminated at the state level. We're going to give the teachers a permanent pay raise. Again, this is all stuck inside of the constitutional changes, and we're going to do so by paying down on the UAL and then allowing those savings to be used for the teacher pay raise. All good stuff. All good stuff.
Have we been able to evaluate, though, whether or not this is going to be a revenue-neutral impact, break-even for local government? As you well know, there are a lot of local governmental entities that do tax prescription drugs, and in some cases, it generates large amounts of money for them. Are we sure, or is there a level of certainty that this will be revenue-neutral for local government?
We are. We're looking. Well, actually, what we hope is that this package will actually bring the locals actually more revenue rather than less. And I'll tell you, Lou, I am certainly open to any type of constructive criticism as you pour through these packages, because you've dealt with it as the chief tax collector of Jefferson Parish back in the days when you were the sheriff. One of the things, and then there's a couple of things in there. Number one, when you start aligning those sales tax bases, we think that brings in that picks up where you're going to take off. The other thing that it does do, too, is it allows for those parishes that have mineral extraction, right? So in those that have oil and gas or potentially maybe carbon sequestration that may be coming online, we're lifting the cap on the severance taxes, right? So now the locals will get a much larger percentage of that severance amount. And so, again, we're making a number of different changes that we hope actually bring locals more revenue rather than less, and certainly builds an on-ramp for our local governments to be able to raise more revenue if needed with a vote of the people in that locale. When you look at other states that have done much better than us, you see that it is that the local governments have greater flexibility in both budgeting and raising revenue.
The renewal of the 4/5 cent sales tax, that expires in June of 2025. Is it your intention that you're going to roll that into the base rate of the state, or will it have a sunset in the renewal of that 4/5 cent sales tax?
That's going to be a good question for the legislature. I mean, we want, you know, my idea is that we want to keep that at this time. That stabilizes us. We want to get off of having a budget based upon, you know, corporate and individual income taxes, which certainly become a whole lot more volatile, and use more consumption-based taxing, which is a whole lot more stable. And so whether the legislature wants to, again, create a timeline for it or not, my hope is that what we're going to see is that this tax package is actually going to raise more revenue for the state and give us the ability to further reduce the income tax. The goal is to eliminate the income tax like the states around us have done. That will make us way, way, way more competitive. So that's the question is if we see that this package actually starts to raise us more money, the question is, can we go further in eliminating the personal income tax even further and eventually eliminating it altogether? Or do we use some of that money for infrastructure projects, which are badly needed as well? That's the kind of flexibility we want to give the legislature, and that's a question for them.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because it would seem to me if there is a desire to reduce the rates even further in the future, the stability of rolling it into the base rate of the state as opposed to a sunset and a renewal and going back to the public to vote on it, create some uncertainty, right?
It does. It does. Look, I think that what you're offering is extremely sound, and I'm supportive of that as well. Those are some of the questions and the discussions that we're having for the legislature, and we'll just see what the appetite is for them to do it. I think that when the people have an opportunity to fully digest this, and again, I'm not telling you that we're not going to have to tweak this thing or there are going to be some changes inside of that. They're already occurring as we have more and more discussions. But we want this. Look, this is the one thing I can tell you about this package is this package is a package for the people. It's not for special interests. It's for the people of this state. It's to finally get Louisiana in a position to be able to gain the economic prosperity that it deserves, especially at a time when there's this new industrial south coming. And there are some great projects that we've been talking to stakeholders on that are coming to Louisiana. And when you look at the tax foundation, it says this package takes us from the bottom 10 to the top 10. When you look at states like North Carolina, when they implemented this tax reform, their average family income, median average family income, rose by $11,000 a year. That's the kind of change we'd love to see here in this state. I know you would too.
Oh, no doubt. On the individual tax rates, there is a cap, a salary cap of, you know, in that three-tier system that you described. When we talk about the being reduced to 3%, will that cap still stay in place or does that go away? So when you reach
a
certain
income, I'm going to have to ask Richard. Yeah, I will get that answer back to you. That was the first time that has come. Someone's asked me that question. I really don't have that answer, but I can guarantee you Richard Nelson does. And we'll get it back to you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Interesting, and don't take this wrong. It's not a criticism, but I'm gonna characterize it as exotic. The approach relative to state stipends becoming a permanent part of their salary. Moving forward, and then local government then being responsible for the payment of same, kind of the same question as it relates to local government, making sure that it's revenue neutral. Is there a degree of certainty that you have that this scheme would be revenue neutral for local school boards? Because many of these local school boards right now are contemplating going out on tax increases because they kind of find themselves behind the eight ball. And you know as well as I, there are more students, a larger share of what are called ELS students, English as a second language, where we're having to teach people the English language in order to educate them. Those kids cost more per student to educate, and obviously it's a challenge that a lot of school systems did not anticipate, and they got hit with pretty large numbers in a very short period of time, and many of them are behind the eight ball today.
Look, you're raising a great question that of course could take us down another path for maybe another segment one day in the not so distant future, you know, to talk about the problems that we've had from an immigration standpoint, the challenges that they pose. I do. We looked extremely careful on being able to on how the calculations worked on the paying down of the UALs. And when we looked at the amount of time and the time period that these school boards were going to be paying the state. So these are payments that the school boards are now making to the state of Louisiana that will be extinguished by the state of Louisiana taking some funds that we have and paying off that debt. And you know, I can get you a flow chart on that. Richard can walk you through the particular numbers, but we are very certain that the ability for those school boards to maintain that permanent teacher pay raise should be there. You know, one of the things that I have found, Lou, and I'll probably get myself in trouble for saying it, but it is the truth, is that, you know, when you look at these school boards, the ratio of teachers to back office personnel has become out of whack. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at it and you look at the amount of money that
you see that in a lot of bureaucracies, right? You see that in a lot of bureaucracies.
Exactly. But by using education because listen, we send our kids to school to be educated by a teacher. And so to me, what we've tried to do through all of these educational reforms is place the teacher back on the pedestal that he or she belongs in and say, listen, the teacher is the most important person in the educational system. The parents are the most important voice in a child's education, and trying to marry those two. And I think by working our way through these problems and starting to reduce the debt load that these school boards have accumulated over the years in the way that we're doing it, I think that these school boards can permanently keep this teacher paid. And I'll tell you this too. I think this is important because Orleans is right next door, and they're one of the unfortunate ones, which is kind of odd. I didn't know Orleans had such a low teacher pay scale. I'm thinking, man, as big as the city is. But there are going to be some parishes under which the amount of the pay raise may not get to $2,000, but that which is where our goal is. There's some that it's going to be over. And I don't have the chart in front of me, but I know Orleans is one of them. And we're going to go. I've got a commitment with the legislation, and those school boards have a commitment from us to be able to top that off until they can stand on their own. That's not a lot. It's not a lot. Some of them be like some of them are like at 1,800 or 1,900 instead of 2,000. And so those are some of the things that we're going to have to kind of work our way and massage through between now and the time that we start the session, and then throughout, you know, the, I don't know, 18, 20 days or 15 days of the session that we're going to put them in.
Oddly enough, you may not believe this, but Jefferson finds themselves in the same situation as they compete against parishes like St. Charles and others in the metropolitan area that pay significantly more to their teachers than we pay here. So it's not a problem unique to the city of New Orleans.
But let me give you an example. So the average, just I finally got the chart right here. So the average teacher pay in Jefferson Parish is about $54,000, $54,500. And based upon the calculations and the formula that we're using in paying down the UAL and the amount that Jefferson Parish was paying to the state of Louisiana, they should be able to sustain a $2,400 teacher average salary increase, right? Mm-hmm. Again, we, you know, this is something that when the voters vote on the constitutional amendment is going to mandate that those schools give those teachers. And again, I think that it helps them tighten their budget up a little bit and place the money where it's most important, which is in the classrooms.
No, absolutely. I mean, if it has that impact, that positive impact, that's a good thing. I'm actually encouraged to hear that the data is there to support it. You know, because it's all going to be, as you well know, Governor, you've been around a long time, about being revenue neutral. Local government is where it's at. That's where predominantly most of the services are provided. and we're in for challenging times. I think 10 years, 15 years from now, hopefully things will be different in migration, greater than out migration, that you've talked a lot about, is absolutely critical and necessary to the success of the Louisiana economy. But it's those days in between, right? is where the rubber meets the road.
Look, all of the questions you're asking, and probably more that you have, are very important. And we have thought, we got a lot of smart people that are really into this, that have really been working real hard, and not only in the administration or on the fourth floor, but also in the legislature as well. We have stayed in contact with the Senate and the House leadership, with both the chairs, working through this. A lot of this is part and parcel of things that many legislators have been trying to get done for quite some time now. We've been able at this time to be able to package it into one package. And look, are there any mistakes inside that package? Well, they probably are.
Oh, sure.
I mean, but we're not going to make perfect the enemy of the good because we can't afford to do that.
Yeah, I think most people, Governor, and you know this as well. I mean, whenever you're doing a rewrite like this, there's so many little details that don't align with one another. And I think really what people are looking for and what you've described is this kind of open and receptive environment where we can have a debate or a conversation about things and gain a better understanding of the pluses and the minuses and trying to equal it out and make sure that no one's financially hurt significantly. I do have one other question. I mean, it's been a big issue for me the whole time that I was sheriff and the whole time I was the chief financial officer of the organization. There has been some conversations about state centralized tax collection. Where are you on that issue?
That is not part of this particular package. I mean, look, I think that we have over the course, certainly the last 8 years, I think you might be able to correct me, have had a lot of discussion and have had a lot of changes in sales tax collections. And so I think that those changes that have been discussed and have passed need an opportunity to be able to work their way out to find out if the changes that we made were actually good or bad, or where we go from here. But right now, that is not inside the equation. Not inside the equation is the homestead exemption. Not inside the equation is the tax on food for home consumption. So all the kind of the thing, the hot politically sensitive topics, we've tried to move on the side and say, listen, let's see if we can find us a path where everybody can get comfortable with this package.
So, Governor, I lied. I do have one more question because I'm getting a lot of texts, and I know you're going to want to say this to the seniors. A lot of the seniors are saying, explain this tax deduction for seniors real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to double the retirement exemption for seniors, right, which will give them more money. So especially for those seniors that may fall into the second tax bracket on the personal income tax, which is anyone who earns more than $12,500, they're going to get a double exemption on that, so they get a further reduction. And I tell you what we'll do is for those seniors, I'll make a note of this. I'll see if we can't get something on the website that kind of lays it out in very generalized terms for how it impacts them. I can also tell them that I know on our social media, I don't know exactly where on the website, but on our social media accounts, we've got like a 4 or 5 slide deck, just 4 or 5 slides, a deck that has 4 or 5 slides. And one of them shows the impact that not only seniors, but on couples, on those that are single based upon the income that they make and what the overall impact is, the impact of tax cut on Louisiana households. And I'll try to make sure that we get that back up on our social media and on our website, and you can point them there.
Well, sir, thank you so much for joining us today. We know you're incredibly busy. We appreciate the time, and best of luck with the upcoming special session.
Okay, thank you. Look forward to doing it again. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. That was Governor Jeff Landry, the governor of the great state of Louisiana. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Craig Mirambell, Jr., president of the Board of Directors of Nomar, and Thomas Ogg, Market Manager, Senior Vice President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. The Nomar is hosting the 14th Annual Economic and Real Estate Forecast Symposium presented by Gulf Coast Bank and Trust tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Jefferson Performing Arts, and they're here to talk to us about it. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Noel. Appreciate it.
So, Craig, if you would start and tell our audience a little bit about Nomar and what it is that you guys do.
Nomar is a board representing several parishes in the region that houses basically all the realtors in the area, and we provide market statistics as well as realtor services for the market. So that's a large part of what we do. And ultimately, this day tomorrow is inviting everyone to attend a good seminar and good information on local real estate market.
Obviously, the local real estate market really drives our economy in so many different ways, right? In fact, interestingly, I was just reading an article about Florida and some of the distressed valuations in certain sectors of the state of Florida, not throughout the state of Florida, and it's interesting because they feel like they're upside down, and it's always good to have your finger on the pulse of what's actually happening, right?
Yeah, and that's a good thing. That's the saving grace for us in a slow market, which has been since the last year or so. Largely, we had such an uptick during COVID time, a wild uptick, and then it's slowed. It's obviously slowed. We have a lot of things going on at the same time as insurance, interest rates, elections, all these things happening at one time is going to cause the market to slow. What the good saving grace about this whole thing is, our market value has not. People have not lost any equity in their homes. We've actually increased, 4 or 5% over this last year during this slowdown. So we're seeing more homes on the market. We're seeing longer days on market. But ultimately, all of our sellers are saying, hey, we're going to hold tight. We know we can get our numbers, and we are. And that's the great thing about this market, even in a slow time.
And Thomas Ogg, Market Manager, Senior Vice President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Obviously, for you guys, y'all are major players in the real estate market, always lending people money in that respect, always mindful of rates and trying to offer the best deals for your clientele. But information is power, right? And the more that folks recognize and realize what the real estate market is doing, it very much influences the decisions that they make for themselves personally, correct?
That's absolutely right, Noel. With rates coming down, you've got some people coming off the sidelines now that have boosted activity that we've seen on our end. So, the Fed lowering rates directly affects the commercial loan rates that we offer. So that's been good with their half a point rate cut that occurred a couple of weeks back. And it's anticipated that they're going to lower rates again in early November at their next meeting. By how much? We'll see. But that has boosted some activity on the commercial side, and I think that's going to continue into the first quarter of next year. And in the same time, we've had 30-year rates coming down as well, and so that has helped the residential market with those buyers too.
Now, this is a great opportunity because, Nomar brings together, I think y'all have like 500 experts that are involved, and you're always looking at the latest forecasting models and the data. If you would, Craig, what do y'all see? I mean, I know that the symposium tomorrow is entitled New Orleans Growth stabilization, or disruption. Why don't we break it up in those three categories?
Yeah, sure. We have several speakers coming in tomorrow, including insurance spokespersons for the state. And ultimately, there's a lot of confusion, which is kind of what our title says. Like, is it stable right now, or is it a disruption? Like, we're still trying to figure that out because it hasn't been a steady year. It's been kind of, you know, one market is doing really well and another market slows down. So there's been a lot of confusion and back and forth. But ultimately kind of remaining steady is kind of what we're seeing. So tomorrow we'll break that down into several sessions, and each speaker will come in and tell a little bit about what they're experiencing on the commercial side, on the residential side, on the insurance side, and then also on the lending side. So it's broken down for a full day, and you'll get a better understanding from the experts of what we're seeing. And at the end of that day, you can kind of form your own opinion of where we all stand.
At the present time, are we seeing our days of inventory move much that's out there of residents and light commercial?
Yeah, I mean, move much. The days on market, if that's what you mean.
Days on the market, yeah, increased. Excuse me.
Days on market's definitely increased. Overall, the funny thing, you know, residentially speaking, the funny thing is, you put a house on the market in a great neighborhood and it's updated or new, and those things are still flying off the market with multiple bids sometimes. I mean, there's multiple offers on these houses. But at the same time, someone down the street that's not maybe as updated or has a high insurance cost, that's sitting for 4 or 5, 6 months. Largely because folks are not saying, hey, we're gonna drop the price until we sell. They're saying, no, we're holding this price. My neighbor's getting this. I'm holding price. They don't have to sell. So ultimately, that's helping stabilize things. But yes, the overall days on market has increased.
And I'm hearing, Thomas, that people that price their house appropriately, they're selling quick. I mean, I hear that over and over and over again. A lot of folks are trying to still get value, get a price for their home that was had maybe 2 years ago, but those conditions don't hold true today, right?
Well, I think a lot of it, you know, New Orleans, the greater New Orleans area is made up of so many specific type of neighborhoods, right? And mm-hmm. some neighborhoods have been holding their desirability throughout the last year, right? So like Craig mentioned, if it's in a certain neighborhood and updated and doesn't have an insurance issue for that particular neighborhood or section of town, those houses are moving pretty quickly. So people aren't having to, you know, lower their price compared to some of the other areas of the greater New Orleans area. It's just, you know, very neighborhood specific.
Craig, one of the initiatives that you guys have is to bring other people in to Nomar that aren't your traditional real estate folks, because a lot of what they do actually impacts what you guys do, right?
Yeah, with our commercial investment division that's putting on the symposium tomorrow through Nomar, they recognize that there's so many companies and people that are affected by our local real estate market, and we've opened the door and said, please come, please attend, please share your inputs with what you're experiencing, so we can better formulate a plan on how to attack that, how to improve that, because we know we all kind of ultimately go with our economy. And largely, our economy is always moving with our real estate economy. So having that need and desire is why we're kind of opening the doors to not just be realtors and appraisers invited, but anyone that's been affected by this, you know, this stabilization or this disruption.
So I'm assuming there's still tickets available for tomorrow's event if anybody has any interest in just being exposed to some incredible speakers as well as you know, the outlining of key data elements in the real estate market. Where would they go to get tickets?
Sure. NOLAforecast.org. There are tickets available. They're $85 for a full day. You can kind of come in if you want to look at the agenda and see something you like, come in and watch that part and leave for the others. For any of the realtors, it is a CE, a continuing education type event, so you will earn hours for that. But ultimately, yes, more than welcome to come, and please buy your tickets at NOLAforecast.org.
Y'all are right in the middle of my show, or otherwise I'd be there, because I've talked to a lot of folks that don't miss. Every year they're there, and they say it's one of the best symposiums that they attend throughout the year. So congratulations on that, and best of luck tomorrow with tomorrow's event.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you, guys. Craig Mirenbell, president of the Board of Directors of Nomar, and Thomas Ogg, the market manager, senior vice president at Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We will be right back, folks, after the break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. Stay with us. So, got a lot of texts coming in about the discussion with the governor over this tax plan. At the 100,000-foot level, there's no doubt that we need to engage in tax reformation. I've talked about this. I've been on air now 7 years. I've talked about this a lot over that seven-year period of time. Looking at tax exemptions that exist today on services, a lot of which you wouldn't even know about. It wouldn't impact your life one way or the other. A lot of it is business transactions that are exempted, some of which were put on the books back in the 50s and the 60s. And the utility of this exemption has changed significantly, and in many cases has become incredibly broad. What was really initially designed for heavy equipment has now been, you know, utilized for outfitting the lunchroom. And it's something that should be looked at, quite frankly, because I think in many cases there are a lot of folks that have abused, and I use the word abuse, these tax exemptions, because we don't actually do a great job, and typically most governments don't, in policing the utilization of these tax exemption certificates. And it's something that really we need to get our hands on, right? So, but down at the 50,000, 25,000, 10,000 foot level, there's still a lot of details to be ironed out. And I asked some very broad questions of the governor, and quite frankly, I thought he was very honest. If he didn't know the answer, he said, I don't know the answer to that. You know, but I'll do my best to find out. I was encouraged a little bit about some of the stuff that they have looked at and some of the data that they have put together, because in the end, this is going to really be about your local government and whether or not they're going to be in a revenue neutral position when all of this, you know, works its way out and through the process. Because if not, and they're behind the eight ball, it's going to be problematic. Because the level of services that you've grown accustomed to with the tax base that's actually established at the present time, if that has to change, you know what that means. Local government's going to be compelled to come to you for tax increases. And I don't think that there's a healthy appetite for that at all in this state. In fact, at this point in time, I say there's zero possibility of new taxes really getting passed with ease. Other than, you know, when you talk about renewals. And it would really put local government in a pickle. I like what the governor said about aligning what we're able at the local level to tax as opposed to the state, because the state has a much broader base in the sales tax arena of services that the state is able to tax, where local government now is prohibited from having a sales tax on. So it's going to be interesting to see how this ultimately plays itself out. I know a lot of the local folks that I've had an opportunity to talk to all believe that the tax reformation needs to be done. They're looking at this and sharpening their pencils, trying to gain a better understanding of what the impact is. There's a back and forth that's going on with Secretary Richard Nelson and his staff, and so that they can develop a comfort level of where they may ultimately end up with this package. And we've begun to start looking at it as well, and we will continue to have conversations through November 7th and through, obviously, the 21st. This is going to be 2 days after the presidential election that they call themselves into a special session. So we'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.